Emily Hobhouse, heroine of the Anglo-Boer War. Although she was a British citizen, Emily Hobhouse was awarded an honorary South African citizenship because of her courageous and sacrificial actions, which exposed the cruelty of the concentration camps during the Anglo-Boer War of 1899-1902. Emily was born 9th of April, 1860, and raised in St. Ives in East Cornwall. Her father was a Church of England pastor for 51 years. Her mother was the daughter of Sir William Trelawney, a member of Parliament for East Cornwall. So if anyone's watching the Poldark series, that's Cornwall. She came from that area. After her mother's death, Emily cared for her father until his death in 1895. Then she traveled to the United States to undertake welfare work amongst the miners in Minnesota. An engagement to John Carr Jackson was broken off in 1898, and she returned to England. You can only assume she was so principled, there must have been some reason why she turned him down. Emily was involved in social actions and was a member of the Women's Industrial Committee. And as the Anglo-Boer War broke out in October 1899, she joined the South African Conciliation Committee. As secretary, she organized protest meetings against the war. Very, very brave when you are against a war that people don't take kindly when you oppose the war of their countries today. Back then, 100 years ago, even less acceptable. In the summer of 1900, she first learned that hundreds of Boer women had become impoverished and driven away from their homes. Emily Hobhouse launched the South African Women's and Children's Distress Fund and traveled to South Africa by boat to deliver aid to the Boer women and children who were suffering because of the war. Now, she thought they'd be suffering the luxuries of life. She didn't know that they were being deprived of basic necessities like water and soap, or fuel, or food. She arrived in Cape Town 27th of December 1900 and began to learn of concentration camps in Port Elizabeth, Johannesburg, Bloemfontein, Potchefstroom, Norvalspoort, Kroonstad, Irene, and elsewhere. She obviously wasn't informed about the concentration camp on Greenpoint Common. So even in Cape Town at Greenpoint, where our present park and stadium is, was actually a site of a concentration camp. As martial law had been declared over large parts of the Cape Colony, she needed the permission not only of Lord Milner, but also of General Kitchener to visit these camps. She managed to charm Lord Milner easily enough for him to give permission, but General Kitchener blocked her going any further north than Bloemfontein. Because of her persistence and perseverance, she finally received permission to proceed, but the orders were from Kitchener, no further than Bloemfontein, don't let her get any further. Emily described arriving at the concentration camp outside Bloemfontein on 24th of January 1901. 2,000 people had been dumped on the slope of a kopje with inadequate accommodation, massive overcrowding of 10 to 12 people in a bell tent. No soap, inadequate water, no beds, no mattresses, scarce fuel, extremely meager rations. And the actual quantity dispensed fell far short of the amount prescribed, and it simply meant famine. These people were dying of starvation. She took these pictures. All kinds of sickness festered in the camps, including measles, bronchitis, pneumonia, dysentery, and typhoid. This is a little girl. Bloemfontein concentration camp, Lizzie van Sale, holding the porcelain doll given to her by Emily Hobhouse. Almost every tent housed one or more sick persons. When she requested soap for the inmate, she was told by the authorities soap is a luxury. As she investigated and interviewed, she wept. She went beyond Bloemfontein to investigate other concentration camps. Norvalspoort concentration camp. I mean, notice, no trees, no shade, just out on the veld. And by the way, some of these camps had snow on them in that winter. It was a very harsh winter. You can see the lines. I mean, these are simple bell tents, canvas. Do you know how cold it is out there in the middle of winter in those sort of conditions? And blazing up in summer, exactly. To put people in those conditions, it's just, it's pretty inhuman. Aliwal North, when informed by the administrator of the Orange River Colony that she showed too much personal sympathy. Emily replied, that was the precise reason why I came out, to show personal sympathy and to render assistance in case of personal afflictions. The report of a visit to the camps of women and children in the Cape and Orange River colonies by Emily Hobhouse was absolutely devastating. Children were dying at a rate of 50 a day in these overcrowded and unhygienic camps. I call this camp system a wholesale cruelty. To keep these camps going is murder to the children. The women are wonderful, she wrote. They cry very little and they never complain. The very magnitude of their sufferings, their indignities, their loss and anxiety seems to lift them beyond tears. They nurse, underfed, overworked, coping with some 30 typhoid and other patients, a six-month-old baby grasping out its life on its mother's knee, a girl of 21 lay dying on a stretcher, the mother watching a child of six also dying. Gijsbert Johannes Vermeulen of De Wetsdorp died at the age of 12 in the Bloemfontein concentration camp. Already this couple had lost three children in the hospital, like faded flowers thrown away, a splendid child dwindled to skin and bone, a baby so weak it was past recovery, it was only 3 months old. This picture isn't as nice as it looks. They had a practice back then of having a picture with their dead child before burying them. But she's holding a dead child. But much, such a sweet little thing. It was still alive in the morning when I called in the afternoon. She beckoned in to see the little tiny thing laid out. To me, it seemed a murdered innocent in an hour or two after another child died. The body of Jaapie van den Berg outside the tent where he died, Bloemfontein concentration camp. At Springfontein, a young lady had to be buried in a sack. It is a curious position, hollow, rotten to the heart's core, to have made all over the state large and comfortable communities of people. By the way, this little boy surprisingly survived. Another person she took a picture of. These people whom you call refugees and say you are protecting, but who call themselves prisoners of war, compulsorily detained and detesting your protection. The British are saying, oh, they asked for our protection. And they all said, it's a lie. None of us asked for their protection. They're the ones hunting our husbands and brothers and sons and who burned our farm. We didn't ask for their protection. Those who are suffering most keenly and those who have lost the most, either their children by death or their possessions by fire and sword, such as those reconcentrated women in the camps, have the most conspicuous patience and never express a wish that their men should be the ones to give way. It must be fought out now to the bitter end, they say. This is one of these concentration camps. Notice to prisoners of war, given in Dutch and English. No prisoners of war allowed outside the limits of the inner camp. The sentries are on strict orders to shoot any prisoners passing the inner fence by order. This sign at the refugee camp, where reconstituted women had sought British protection. It is a very costly business upon which England has embarked, and even at such a cost, hardly the barest necessities can be provided and no comforts. Interestingly enough, it was said by the British that this was their most expensive war to date. And by 1902, they'd never fought a more expensive war than the Anglo-Boer War, in terms of money spent. Even more expensive, apparently, than the Napoleonic Wars, extraordinarily. But they couldn't afford soap for the women and children in the camps. The Mafeking camp folk were very surprised to hear that the English women cared about them and their suffering. It has done them a lot of good to hear that real sympathy is felt for them at home, and so I'm glad that I fought my way here, if only for that reason. You know, it often means the most, as someone who's been serving Persecuted Church for over 37 years, many, many times for the people, just to know that you're not forgotten, to know that you're not alone, that there's someone who cares. Even if we brought them nothing but a bit of hope, that means a lot. And to see pictures like these, of these people gathered, in this case for church service and open. Emily Hobhouse campaigned tirelessly against the cruel concentration camp system, the war carried out against Boer women and children, the Scorched Earth campaigns. So this is one of her leaflets she got printed. And she says, the government official returns that since June there have been 6,478 deaths. So this is just speaking about one time. 5,209 children have died. Now that's at that time. She's trying to mobilize people in 1901. The death rates in September are appalling. 264 per 100,000, 433 per 100, per 1,000. This is a quarter, this is almost a half. You had better survival rates in Auschwitz and Buchenwald than you had in this. Better survival rates in the gulags. And how can they justify this? The average death rate in Britain is about 20 per 1,000 per annum, but in these camps, up to 433 per 1,000 per annum. All the children will be dead in the course of 2 years if this death rate keeps up, they said. And so she challenges, you know, whatever you think of the war, and whether you think the war is inevitable or just, or unnecessary or wrong, you cannot wish for this. Support the government if you will. Tell them that you will supply 250,000 more soldiers if you have to. But tell them you will tax yourself to give them 200 million more money if necessary. But at the same time, you must order these death camps to be broken up and the women and children transported to healthier places and supplied with good doctors, nurses, and food. You must save the lives of the women and children. So this is a good example of literature campaigning, attract campaign, poster campaign. The burning of farmhouses, the poisoning of wells, the slaughtering of herds of cattle and flocks of sheep. And by the way, we're talking about over 30,000 farms destroyed. 30,000 farmsteads destroyed. More than 30,000 wells poisoned or dynamited. The destruction of millions of cattle and horses and sheep. Millions. There are cases where they'd have the British army line up their company, aim in, and just shoot the livestock and leave them out in the open, or throw some of the dead bodies down the wells to poison them. Incarceration of civilians in concentration camps. The British took these pictures of burning farmsteads. They took these pictures to document what they were doing. They took the picture while they were burning and looting people's farms. These soldiers, Australians, were happy to picture themselves destroying somebody's home, drinking things before burning the home. Here they've got everything from destroying a piano onwards. This is a farmstead the British filmed before, during demolition, and after. They're documenting their own atrocities. And here they pose, taking pictures of, I mean, can you imagine a picture in Downton Abbey of Lord Grantham standing outside one of the farms that had blown up or something like that? No, that wouldn't exactly add to the whole episode, would it? And notice when they try to take pictures of these women, they turned their faces. They didn't want the grief to be seen on camera. And even here, the British are taking pictures of some of the women that they were transporting, and most of them are hiding their faces under their cuppies. Here going towards the Pietermaritzburg concentration camp. The children were not quite as determined to avoid being photographed. The grim plight of those held at the Bloemfontein concentration camp. Now, this is now a picture taken by Emily Hobhouse when she is traveling. Anna Deville and her daughter performed domestic chores outside their tent. So these are some of the pictures that Emily Hobhouse released in order to help people to put a face to the victims. Children at the Bloemfontein concentration camp carrying water. You can see the people trying to maintain some kind of normality in this situation. Yes. I mean, you know, these people have every reason to be extremely angry. But, of course, here's Emily coming and showing kindness from someone who they would have considered an enemy. Orphans at Novelspont concentration camp. Again, Emily Hobhouse photograph. Orphans. The innocent casualties of war. They've lost both their parents. Map of British concentration camps in South Africa. You can see basically along railway lines in particular, dotted all the way along here. There are a lot of concentration camps here. But this isn't all of them. The most closest green point. The interior of the ruined Dutch Reformed church at Ventersburg burned by British forces. Why did they need to burn a church? Night of 2nd of February 1902, a British column burned down this church in Lindley. An outpouring of revulsion in England spurred the British government to at last improve conditions in the camps. Here they've got numbers of people in camps, numbers of children, those who've died during the month of September and so on. and are working out. Again, total deaths, 264 per thousand. Deaths of children, 433 per thousand. Basically means in 2 years there'd be almost no children left at that rate. One of the first successes of Emily Hobhouse's campaign was that soap began to be issued among the meagre rations and conditions began to improve in the camps. Reverend Charles Ackard, a British minister in Liverpool, declared on Sunday the 22nd of December, 1901, "Great Britain cannot win the battles without resorting to the last despicable cowardice of the most loathsome cur on earth, the act of striking a brave man's heart through his wife's honour and his child's life. The cowardly war has been conducted by methods of barbarism. The concentration camps have been murder camps." This preached from the pulpit. Got to have been super unpopular at that time for people to hear that. But a minister must say what's got to be said, even if his audience and congregation are furious at being told it. Later they would agree. The body of Miss Boerta of Lady Brunton, 18 years old when she died in Bloemfontein, it was her wish that the fearclue be draped around her chest after death. And again, picture and comments by Emily Hobhouse. It's just heartrending and outrageous when you think what was done there. "What availeth a man if he gains the whole world but loses his own soul?" That's quite a good comment somebody scratched into a rock overlooking one of the camps. Emily Hobhouse wrote that she could not forgive crass male ignorance, helplessness, and muddling. "I rub as much salt into the sore places in their minds." Emily Hobhouse received scathing criticism and hostility from the British government and many in the media upon her return to Britain, where she was, of course, called a traitor. There's a title of a book out on her called Beloved Traitor. Freyheit District, dynamiting the house of General Louis Botha, 28th of August, 1901. However, the opposition leader, Sir Henry Campbell Bellarmine, denounced the methods of barbarism, this phrase picked up, methods of barbarism, and forced the governor to set up the Fawcett Commission to investigate her claims. Although Emily Hobhouse was not allowed to be part of this commission, and upon her return to Cape Town, October 1901, she was not permitted to leave her ship. She wasn't allowed to land. She is deported on the next ship out, and her reports continued to circulate. She wrote a lot. She moved to France to write the book The Brunt of the War and Where It Fell, which mobilized even more outrage and action. The Fawcett Commission, actually, although government appointees, confirmed Emily Hobhouse's reports. In spite of fierce opposition from the British newspapers supporting the government's war, Emily continued to address public meetings about the plight of women and children in South Africa with huge amounts of heckling, huge amounts of threats, physical threats. Sometimes the police had to escort her out for her safety from rabble-rousing people in England. And you wouldn't normally think the English resorted to such despicable behavior, but acting like EFF thugs act today, just shouting her down so that she couldn't even say anything. That's how strong the sentiment was in many places. Emily was actually quite an artist. She did this watercolor. You can see this in the Anglo-Boer War Museum, Bloemfontein, of this church at Lindley that was burned down, a ravaged farmhouse west of Bloemfontein, another watercolor by Emily Hobhouse. Middelburg Concentration Camp Cemetery, watercolour by Emily. There's no doubt that the initiatives and energetic actions of Emily Hobhouse shortened the war, saved countless lives. She also gave hope to mothers who had lost all hope. Who knows how many tens of thousands more would have died if this war had been allowed to carry on for another year or two. And so the British suddenly had to jump around and produce some decent hospitals. Emily Hobhouse's courageous campaign to speak up for the forgotten Boer women and children who had been brutally treated played a major role in undermining the popular British support for the war. Up till then, people tend to support the war, any war, whatever war it is, support the troops, be patriotic, my country, right or wrong. That was the attitude. She was one of the first to change that attitude, that you could be a patriot and oppose your country's foreign policy. It also forced the government to offer massive concessions to the Boer forces, which led to the Boers regaining control of their country through the Union of South Africa, 1910. Magnificent building, tremendous architecture. And here this classic picture of the Vereeniging Conference where they signed the peace 31 May. The first prime ministers of the Union of South Africa were all Boer generals. General Louis Botha, General Jan Smuts, General James Barry Hertzog. And here's the aftermath of the war. Ruins of the once proud farmhouse of Jan Hildenhuis. Gutted. Emily Hobhouse returned to South Africa in 1903 to set up Boer Home Industries, teaching young women spinning and weaving, many of them, of course, widowed. Through her efforts, 27 schools were established in the Transvaal and Orange Free State. She travelled South Africa again in 1913 for the inauguration of the National Women's Monument in Bloemfontein, but was forced to stop at Beaufort West due to ill health. Sadly, she didn't make it, but she had a message that was sent on ahead that they were able to read out. Some of her friends and contemporaries. Here you can see General Christian de Wet speaking at the opening of the monument, I believe. The imposing twin towers of Bloemfontein Church, in which Dominie Andrew Murray held an inaugural service for the monument, 16 December 1913. One often forgets that Andrew Murray was a missionary to the Free State for 11 years before the revival of 1860 and his ministry in Wellington and Worcester, Cape Town. And so, again, seeing the inauguration of these monuments, and Mrs. Tibby Steyn, the wife of the president, Martina Steyn of the Free State, read out Emily Hobhouse's speech. And on this occasion, you can see the people gathering, the young women. Interesting how the women are all dressed in white and the men tend to be dressed in black. That was very much the style at the time. But we would have millions more Afrikaans people in this country if it hadn't been for the Anglo-Boer War and the concentration camps in particular. So Emily Hobhouse was buried finally in the Women's Monument. And when you go to the Anglo-Boer War Monument, one of the first things you see is the Afskate, the men heading off to war, women holding the baby back at home, Die Bitte Einde dominating the hillside over it all. And then the exiles, the people who were forced out of the country, the Barnlinger, they went to Bahamas, to Ascension, to St. Helena, to Ceylon, to India, Portugal. Old men, young children. These are some tapestries that you can see at the Anglo-Boer War Museum of the scorched earth concentration camp policies. Notice the rainbow reminding God's faithfulness amidst this terrible ordeal they had to go through. This is a picture I saw at the Anglo-Boer War Museum just recently. It's obviously a new one. See the Bible, the bandolier, the cross. And then you see how many died in the different concentration camps. Elbel North, children, people over 15 totals. And there's a verse for each one. Interesting scriptures. The Lord has taken. The Lord gave, the Lord has taken. And Barberton, Bloemfontein, 1,695 died in Bloemfontein. Brunfort, Bethuel, Harry Smith, Heidelberg, Heilbronn, Howick, Irene, Isipingo, Jacobs, Kimberley, Clarksdorp, Kroonstad, Krugersdorp, Mafeking, Meadowbank, Middelburg, Novelsport, Nielstrom, Potchefstroom, Pietermaritzburg. Who would have thought this concentration camp, Pietermaritzburg? Petersburg, Springfontein, Standerton, Terfontein, Vereeniging, Volksrust, Vredefortweg, Freiburg, Winburg. That all leads up to the Women's Monument. Imposing. 1938, the Great Trek commemoration wagons from around the country stopped at the Women's Monument as part of their journey to the north, and people dressed in commemorative outfits. Stephen Mitford Goodson's document allowed this. That's not the end of Emily Hobhouse's story. Emily Hobhouse was also an avid opponent of the First World War and vigorously protested against it. Henry Campbell Bannerman, the Prime Minister, came to power largely because of her protest. You have indeed done much since the new century began to give shape and substance to growing and insistent desire that war may be banished from the earth. Emily Hobhouse authored the open Christmas letter calling for peace to the women of Germany and Austria. 101 British women, prominent British women, signed Emily Hobhouse's open Christmas letter, which was endorsed by 155 prominent German and Austrian women in response. May Christmas hasten that day. Peace on earth is gone, but by renewal of our faith that it still rings in the heart of things, Christmas should strengthen both you and I and all womanhood to strive for its return. We are sisters in sorrow. Under the heading, On Earth Peace, Goodwill Towards Men, Emily Hobhouse wrote, Sisters, the Christmas message sounds like mockery to a world at war. But those of us who wished and still wish for peace may surely offer a solemn greeting as to such of you who feel as we do. She mentioned that as in the South African war during the Anglo-Boer War of 1899 to 1902, the brunt of modern war falls on non-combatants, and the conscience of the world cannot bear the sight. And so, to her sisters in sorrow, the Germans received this letter, and then this was signed from the Manchester suffragettes. Is it not our mission to preserve life, she wrote. Do not humanity and common sense alike prompt us to join hands with a woman and urge our rulers to stave off further bloodshed? May Christmas hasten that day. And so the German mothers responded to our English sisters, sisters of the same race, our warm and heartfelt thanks for Christmas greetings, women of the belligerent countries, with all faithfulness, devotion, and love to their country, can go beyond it and maintain true solidarity with the women of other belligerent countries, that really civilized women never lose their humanity. Numerous ministers proclaimed from the pulpit that the guns should fall silent at least upon the night when the angels sang. Although the messages were officially rebuffed and suppressed by governments and heavily censored media, many of the soldiers on the front line seemed to share these sentiments. Whether they heard about it, one way or the other, maybe from letters from sisters from home. But they did observe a Christmas truce. Emily Hobhouse also oversaw the raising of funds and the shipping of food and medicines through neutral countries to the women of Germany and Austria who were starving because of the British naval blockade. And this naval blockade was harsh. You see the big blue dark areas here? That's the mines that they planted. So there was limited areas where ships could go through where the Navy could block them to stop, for the first time, not just stop weapons of war going to the belligerent countries, but to stop food going to the countries. And Germany, at that stage, was 75% dependent on food imports. They were so industrialized, they couldn't grow enough of their own food. These are pictures Emily Hobhouse shared of starving children in Vienna, Austria, because of the British naval blockade. Through her efforts, thousands of women and children starving in Germany and Austria because of the British naval blockade were fed by support she's able to channel to them. And she wrote books like To Love One's Enemies. Emily Hobhouse's remains are buried in a niche at the National Women's Monument in Bloemfontein. Ashes of Emily Hobhouse buried at the foot of the monument in 1926. The funeral of President Martina stained the monument, with General Christian de Wet giving the speech. So Martina Steyn and Rachel Isabella Steyn buried at the monument, General Christian de Wet and Emily Hobhouse. Prime Minister Herzog spoke at the opening of the Boer War Museum on the 30th of September 1930. You can see some trees growing up around here. Here's General James Barry Herzog, who we'll deal with after lunch. Here's women in Futhark costumes at the monument, 16 December 1930. War veteran chaplain of the Old Republic, Dominy Kestel, was buried at the foot of the women's monument in 1941. So you've got the political leader, Martina Steyn, the spiritual leader, J.D. Kestel, the military leader, in General Christian de Wet, and then you've got that English woman, Emily Hobhouse. Quite an interesting symbolism right here. The southernmost town in Orange Free State is named Hobhouse. One of the South African Navy submarines was named the SAS Emily Hobhouse, which played a very key role in the war in Angola and did a lot of major work over there. So Emily Hobhouse, one of our famous submarines. And I suppose it's quite appropriate because she was like undercover, so to speak, someone from the enemy's ranks who was serving the Boer cause. And there were stamps. I remember when our first postage, when Frontline started 37 years ago, average post was 4 cents for mail anywhere in South Africa or Southwest Africa. And Emily Hobhouse was on one of those stamps. I remember that. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. So Emily Hobhouse is one of our heroines, one of the great people who has risen above her country in both the First World War and Anglo-Boer War to have been such a heroine. That's what both Kitchener and the British Prime Minister, that bloody woman, the turbulent life of Emily Hobhouse, Cornwall's forgotten heroine. The concentration camps, the brunt of the war and where it fell, this is a classic, to love one's enemies. So there's some fine books out for her, Boer War Letters, and of course The Gentile of the Boers by Stephen Mitford Goodson. There is a film out, I'd like to get hold of it again. I saw it once when it came out in 1988 or so. That English woman, well worth getting hold of. It was a local film made in South Africa.